And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where I'm so excited because one of my favorite things to do is talk to a great writer about a great story. And Dave McMenamin, our friend at ESPN, dropped a great story on all things Anthony Davis, the making of the trade to the Lakers, his state of mind going into year one with LeBron, and so many other things. Dave, thank you for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Zach. I'm just looking forward to get this thing rolling. Got a China trip upcoming, and I'm happy to finally get this story off my plate because it was something that I tried to chase pretty much all offseason.
Right. So you told me I've got a big Anthony Davis story coming. And I thought, I'm interested to see what it is. Is it about the trade? My guess was it's going to be about Anthony Davis at the crossroads of his career. Anthony Davis after relative anonymity in New Orleans, two playoff appearances, then being sort of thrust into the spotlight of the Lakers. And is he a winner? How come New Orleans didn't do any better when they had Anthony Davis on their team if he's really a top five player in the NBA? Anthony Davis entering this pivotal moment of his career. And it's about that, but it's also about the making of his trade to the Lakers, how it happened, when it happened, what made it almost not happen. So take me back to the beginning. When you said you wanted to get this off your plate, what did you think was going to be on your plate? Like, when you dove into it, what story were you hoping to write or envisioning that you would write?
I really like reading the TikTok. That's what we call them, where you go back and find the blow-by-blow, the play-by-play of, you know, this phone call happened, and then the agent had this conversation with the player, and then that player talked to another player. Like, those type of things where you have an autopsy of how a trade goes down. And that was the original hope, because in this particular story, I was pretty well sourced, having covered the Cavs, you know, for 4 years, three of them, David Griffin was the GM. And so now he's the guy running the Pelicans, one of the principal people involved. Rich Paul, I have a longstanding, you know, reporter source relationship with. And, you know, the Lakers, obviously, that's the team I covered day in, day out last year. So I felt like I could get to the principal parties. And if I could get one of them to tell me something that's blunt and honest, then I could take that to one of the other ones, and they would have to respond to it. And I think I could unravel it that way. And for the most part, that worked. Now, I didn't quite get the big aha of what that final Saturday was like before the trade actually happened. Now, Rob Pelinka told me on the record in the story that there were several times that day that he thought the trade wouldn't happen and they wouldn't even talk again. But I wish it would have been, they would have told me like exactly what the ask was that made it think that it came to the edge and almost fell off a cliff.
Let me start you right there. I was going to ask you what surprised you in reporting the story, but we'll start with something that surprised me, which is what you just said. I circled those quotes from Rob Pelinka saying there were times during that day when I thought the deal was just going to completely fall off the table. Now, I believe this was the Saturday after the finals had ended, the Saturday of Father's Day weekend. And so I wanted to ask you, did you have any sense of like why he thought the deal was going to unravel? Was there a particular asset or set of assets that the teams were arguing about? Was it something else that we don't even know about? No, it's not in the story, so maybe you don't know, but I wonder if there's something in the cutting room floor. Maybe it's a boring thing, but that piqued my curiosity.
Well, obviously there was like the pick swaps, and that was somewhat unprecedented when that happened, to have that many pick swaps. And then the question mark is whether they were trying to get Kyle Kuzma or not, and whether he was included in the deal at some point, and then the Lakers had to fight to hold on to him. And I quite frankly don't know that answer, but when you look at their assets that they have, he would have been like the only piece that we're not talking about, that could have been included, basically.
And by the way, which is important for now, because they still have a trade asset if they decide they need to make another trade. But go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy, he's making like $2 million too. So it's a cost controlled trade asset with a ton of upside. I don't know exactly. Basically both David Griffin and Rob Pelinka told me, like, if I tell you, they'll know, both sides. And so we're the only people who know. And so they wanted to keep that to themselves, which I understand. I think they were pretty forthcoming, all things considered, but there, I guess there are some state secrets that remain that way.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, the Pelicans did an amazing job getting all of the draft assets they got, that they got, and putting them as far out into the future as some of them are. There's a 2023 pick swap, I think, and a 2024 pick that they have the right to defer to 2025, which is one of the first instances of that happening with a first round pick. I could see that, and they have another protected first round pick somewhere. Maybe this is the 2023 one that I'm getting confused with. That's top eight protected, but the protection protects the Pelicans. They only get it if it's in the top eight, and they don't get it if it's 9-30, and then it rolls over. Like, that stuff, people don't realize, like, that takes a lot of haggling to get to that level of specificity and to have so many novel or somewhat novel concepts and how the draft pick change hands. That takes a lot of time. And I maybe it was just sort of the nuts and bolts of that and Kuzma. I don't know.
Right. I imagine they were. And then a point that I make in the story is that when David Griffin was let go by Cleveland, where he didn't come to a contract renewal, literally days later, Kyrie Irving made his trade request. And I've spoken to Griffin over the years about how he kind of has ruminated and thought, you know, over and over incessantly about how he would have handled that had he still had the job. And so coming into this Pelicans opportunity, it was like he was totally prepared for this, what we used to consider unprecedented situation where a superstar with years remaining on his contract is demanding a trade. He had a game plan, and the game plan was basically to get every single thing he can, every last red cent out of the Lakers. And the Lakers, meanwhile, like, they were so all in. Rob Pelinka told me this, like, we felt that we owed it to LeBron to make something like this happen. And so both sides, I think, come away feeling satisfied from it. But you had to applaud David Griffin for really turning the screws on the Lakers in this process.
They say the best offense is a good defense. I think actually some people do say that. And that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. It's time to help keep your engine running like new. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered to defend against four main engine threats. Not one, not two, not three, but four. Gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction. The four evils. It's our most advanced fuel ever, protecting your engine like a solid stiff arm, a huge hit, or a last-second block like LeBron on Andre Iguodala. Like, defensive lines on all premium fuels are the same. Now, that is fuel for thought. And if you're a Fuel Rewards member, you save at least 5 cents per gallon on every fill-up with gold status. That can add up. If you're not a member, download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com to join and never, ever, ever pay full price for gas again. And engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. One of the things that's interesting in the story is that so the AD trade is June 6th. The draft is June 20th. But one of the things that's strongly implied by the story, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate on it at all, is that I don't know that Griff does this trade until he is very confident he's going to be able to get something he wants for the number four pick, which the Lakers had owned. And he says in there somewhere, I spent throughout the whole time we were trying to gauge the value of the fourth pick. He's shopping that pick before he gets it. And the sense I got from your story is, it's essential to him. It's a deal breaker, yes or no, for him that he knows before he makes a trade, I have one or two things that I'm 95% to 100% confident I can get for that fourth pick because I don't necessarily want it. I don't want the player that's going to be available for there. Now, the interesting thing is, I don't think it was the Atlanta deal. I don't think on June 6th he knows that Atlanta deal is on the table for him. So mm-hmm. I don't know what else was out there. But the sense I got reading your story is one of those things, maybe even one of those things that's like that has Pelinka saying, I didn't even know that day if it was going to go through. One of those things is Griff has to be 100% certain I've got something for that four pick that I like.
Yeah, and listen, there was the morning of the trade that went down. Darius Garland had a workout in Los Angeles that the Pelicans were present for. And so, like, they didn't, you know, they weren't going to take him number one. So they were already looking at people that potentially they could gather information for to take their themselves at number four if they were to trade for that pick, or you know, just know more about it if they were to move it. You know, who knows? Maybe they would have moved it to five and Garland still been there, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that was like the kind of the undercurrent of what was going on, where Griff's having one conversation with Rob about what they can get from the Lakers, and then kind of before he even owned those assets, trying to flip them by having other conversations around the league.
And he was talking like, to everybody who had even people that teams that he wasn't even sure, I don't think, if they're ever going to have any. He was shopping it everywhere.
And like, they can't even have these conversations unless on the draft lottery night, both teams come away with this totally improbable scenario where the Lakers were slotted to be the number 11 pick, 9.4% chance to vault up to the top four, and they do. And then the Pelicans, I think they were supposed to be the 6 or 7 pick, they 6% chance to get number one, and they get number one. And so if not for that crazy percentage parlay working out, then this probably doesn't happen. And Anthony Davis is playing on another team.
Well, you know, it's funny. Separate from all this is the sort of the state of the Pelicans, and everyone's very excited about the Pelicans. And I was in the lottery room that night, the secret room, when Alvin Gentry went absolutely bananas and started high-fiving people after they won the lottery. And everyone's excited about, like, Griff did a great job in this trade. He got, if not every red cent, very close to that. But without Zion, I'm not sure there's any excitement in New Orleans, even if everything else is the same. Without Zion, if they just have the number 7 pick, whoever that ends up being, whoever they choose with number 7, there's maybe some mild excitement, but like this summer was a masterstroke for the Pelicans, right? Like every winners and losers column, the Pelicans, Griff hit a home run, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Look how they've pivoted, and like all that's true. The JJ Redick contract is fine. Derek Favors was a good pickup. They did very well with the Lakers. Like Lonzo's interesting. Brandon Ingram's interesting. Josh Hart can help teams win. They turned number four into numbers 8 and 17. Jackson Hayes and the Alexander Walker kid who lit up free agency, and even more stuff that's coming down the pike. Like that's all super exciting. But without Zion as the tentpole to hold it together, I'm not sure that there's like a ton of New Orleans Pelicans buzz going on right now. That lottery was like, for all the reasons you just said and what I just said, that lottery was like an unbelievable moment in recent NBA history.
And it also allowed both sides to go back to the table and realize that a deal could be struck, because there was a lot of rancor that had built up from what went down from December through February. And both executives that had been in charge of those trade talks, and Magic Johnson and Del Demps, no longer work for either franchise. But there's still lingering discontent on the Pelicans side of things, certainly. And, you know, Jackie McMullen, I think, said it on the radio a few months ago, and, you know, really in strong language trying to explain how upset Gail Benson was with Anthony Davis and his representatives for how they handled the trade request. But Griff kind of coming in, knowing Rich Paul, knowing again that he had been thinking about having a chance to execute a trade like this, that he advised Kobe Altman on the Cavs trade with Boston back in the day. They were able to kind of put feelings aside and get back to business.
Well, it's interesting. Griff goes on record in your story saying he's pretty confident that his relationship with Rich Paul was a factor in him getting the job, which I don't know if he said that publicly before. Maybe he did. He's obviously talked about how he saw value in that relationship before Anthony got traded, because obviously Rich represents Anthony, he represents LeBron, they go way back. But for him to say to you, I think that helped me get the job, that's an interesting. It's not an admission. I don't know what it is, but it's an interesting concession, I guess. It's just interesting to hear somebody say that.
It just makes you realize how uniquely intertwined the people working on this deal were. This was something that was left on the cutting room floor, but another thing going in favor of building that bridge back was Trajan Langdon is the GM of the Pelicans, hired by David Griffin. They used to work together in Cleveland. Well, Rob Pelinka and Trajan Langdon worked together as agents under Arne Tellem. So they had their own independent relationship. And so these things matter when deals get done. You know, Rob Pelinka, I think, received probably some fair criticism, but certainly some criticism for coming in as an executive having no previous front office experience. But, you know, his unique path actually paid off to some extent in this deal, because he was an agent who represented Channing Frye and Dion Waiters and had a relationship with David Griffin through that. And he was an agent who worked beside Trajan Langdon, who was also an agent. And then Trajan Langdon, just like him, made the path over to an NBA front office.
Everything comes back to Dion Waiters. That's one of the lessons I'm taking from this podcast. Is everything, he may have been marooned on Waiters Island for the last few years, but everything comes back to Dion Waiters. So all right. So zoom
which
out.
Means everything's got the Syracuse deck. So I'm glad.
Oh,
you could
boy.
Give me that opportunity.
I didn't think about that. Okay. So zoom out for me. What did you learn reporting this that you didn't know, or obviously you learned a lot of things you didn't know, but what did you learn that really surprised you that you think you'll remember 5 years from now when you just randomly sort of think about this story? What surprised you?
Well, just spending time with Anthony, I realized that we know his numbers and we know his skill set, but we don't really know him that well. As people like you and I who consume the NBA on a daily basis. And so that's the first thing, like just getting to know his personality a little bit. We spent about an hour one day in the off season in the Lakers practice facility. And, you know, he's pretty laid back. He comes in, he's wearing a Nike Tech fleece and he's wearing a pair of Nike Spiridons. And I'm kind of a sneakerhead. And so I comment like, oh, those are nice Spiridons. And he goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, Your sneakers, Spiridons. Like, I own a pair too. He goes, oh, I put on what they tell me to wear, which allowed us both to make a joke about the That's All Books t-shirt.
No. Dress yourself, Anthony Davis. Dress yourself. You are a 26 or 27-year-old man, whatever you are. You should pick out your t-shirts and you should pick out your shoes.
Yeah. So that was funny to me that he said it and then he realized immediately that it was the same thing he said about the That's All Folks t-shirt. That's just like a thing I'll remember in terms of like, that was the first time I feel like I made a, you know, a personal connection with the guy. But, you know, some of the stories he told, just think about LeBron James, and I know he's worn number 6, so maybe the 23 isn't so entrenched in his persona, but LeBron James goes out to dinner with him at a restaurant near his home in Brentwood. And like, he wants to really sell it to Anthony that like him, possibly the greatest player of all time, wants to impress this guy and make him feel comfortable and welcome and warm and appreciated. And so just picture LeBron James going into an Italian restaurant, going into the kitchen as he's holding a jersey balled up in his hand and asking them for a to-go bag so he can put the jersey in the bag so he can add to the element of surprise when he presents it to Anthony. Think of LeBron writing out a personalized card. You know, this is a guy from the streets of Akron, a tough upbringing, writing out a personalized card and handing it to Anthony and trying to, again, add to the element of surprise by, you know, and kind of being like tough guy about it, like, oh, Savannah wrote you a card. She wanted you to have this, even though it was from himself. Those are the things that stand out to me where it's like, I don't know. I don't know if you see the great players of the past who are all about machismo and I got to be the toughest guy and go to such lengths to make a guy feel welcome. And to me, that was cool because I think it was like it shows the evolution of the game a little bit. It also shows maybe the emotional intelligence of a guy like LeBron James. And, you know, the amazing thing about the whole life thing we talk about, you know, we already talked about the Pelinka connection in the trade happening, but Anthony Davis was a camper at LeBron's camp, watched the decision in Akron while LeBron was in Connecticut doing the show. And then, you know, LeBron comes to Ohio the next day and he meets him for the first time. That move changed the league forever. And now he's teaming up with LeBron and potentially changing the league forever on his own right.
Okay, so go back. The pizza place story. What's in the to-go bag? You didn't make clear what's in the to-go bag. That's the capper of the story. What is LeBron carrying in the bag?
Yeah, I guess I didn't quite reveal it. So LeBron is carrying a Lakers jersey in his bag, and it's a number 23 Lakers jersey. And he pulls it out of the bag at the end of the dinner and presents it to Anthony. And Anthony, we all just watched Dwayne Wade's retirement tour last year. It was like it became like in vogue to give your jersey to people. And so Anthony's initial instinct was like, okay, he's just giving me his jersey, which is, it's nice.
But it'd be nice, but it's like, it's one step from here's a framed photo of me to put in your house.
Yeah.
It would have been a weird thing to do.
It'd probably be better than not doing anything. At least there's some thought behind it, but it would, yeah, clearly it would be like setting it like it's about me, you know, like when Dwight Howard came to the Lakers the first time, Kobe Bryant media day very clearly said, this is still my team. This is the opposite because Anthony Davis turns around the jersey and there's number 23 with Davis above the number instead of James. And, you know, that was, it really touched him. And he told me that it really just showed how much he wanted me here. And yeah, you know, these things are like, it's part of their brand, it's part of their superstition, but it's part about pride too. And, you know, Anthony Davis had number 23 in his Instagram handle. He wore number 23 when he won the most outstanding player of the Final Four, won a championship at Kentucky, wore it his entire career. And, you know, he's a guy who, as a 17-year-old, went to LeBron's camp and had LeBron James's name on his jersey, his number 44 camp jersey, to now LeBron James is taking his name off his jersey and giving it to Anthony so he can wear his preferred number.
My favorite part of the story is that he signs the card King James number 6. Not LeBron James. King James. That's either corny or cool because there's like 4 people in the world who could get away with something like that. And, you know, LeBron's had King James tattooed on his back since he was in high school. So
yeah.
It's not new. But I just thought maybe in an interpersonal communication with a friend, he would just be like, he could just sign LeBron. I didn't know he would sign that King James.
You'll like this. So I went to the restaurant, just to get some scene, to report on the story. And I actually asked the manager, like, if, you know, he knew anybody who remembered them being there that night. And he asked around and actually the waiter who served them that night came over and talked to me. And so like the booth they were in, it's kind of like the Godfather seat. LeBron's in the very back seat of the restaurant facing out and to the front door. So he can see every single person who comes in, but behind him is the bathroom. And the waiter told me like it was endlessly cracking up all night long when people were like making their way to the bathroom and, you know, maybe walking with a waddle because they really got to go. And right before they get there, they notice LeBron James out of the corner of their eye and like lose it. So that was cool.
This Lakers season, I think, is going to be – I wish we could block out all the noise because the basketball is going to be interesting. And we can't block out all the noise because it's the Lakers, and they hired Jason Kidd as Frank Vogel's number 2 assistant, and it's LeBron. So you know that, like, the book has been written many times over. Like, this, we've seen this movie before. If the Lakers are 2-3, it's going to be DEFCON 1 immediately. This is just how it goes. There's going to be noise and this and that. But, like, I think the dual stories of LeBron passing the torch, which is both remarkable and not that remarkable, right? Like Dwayne Wade did this for LeBron in Miami. Others have done it before, but Dwayne Wade even then was not LeBron. LeBron is either the best or the second best player of all time. And number 2, we don't really know the degree to which the torch is actually going to get passed. Like we've heard LeBron talk about giving up playmaking duty and letting other people run the offense. And yeah, sure, Kyrie got to run the offense. He led the team in shots the year before he demanded a trade, blah, blah, blah. But like, it was always LeBron's team. It was always LeBron's offense. And number 3, I do think what you said about Anthony Davis and like, what do we really know about Anthony Davis? You know, what, like, what do we really know? What is he like to do? What is he about? What is he like off the court? Is interesting to me because this is a big, big year for him. This is going to be more pressure than he's ever played under before. He's going to have to prove to a lot of people that are skeptical that he's real, that he's a winner. Now, I'm not skeptical. I think he's one of the five best players in the league. He's going to kill it there. But if LeBron does pass him the torch at all, if LeBron does say, all right, we're going to run more of the offense through you. You know, I can't do it anymore. Every minute of every game, I'm 35. I'm getting up there. And you're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting, maybe even in the fourth quarter, maybe even in the playoffs in the fourth quarter. Here's the ball. I'm interested to see how he responds to that. I think he'll do well, and he rounded out his game last year. I don't think people really noticed how much he rounded out his game. He averaged 4 assists a game. He's more comfortable dribbling, like working off the dribble. He has a nice in-and-out dribble. He's crossing dudes over at the three-point line. But I'm interested to see how he does. It's a big, big year for him.
We only saw such a small glimpse of this week at training camp for the Lakers, but they let us in the gym for a late game situation they're playing out, and you have LeBron playing point, Anthony playing the five, and very clearly the directive was let Anthony eat, and LeBron was the one pushing that, obviously, because he has a ball in his hands, and we'll see if that plays out consistently over the regular season, but you know, seeing Anthony Davis with the ball in the high post, being able to do the face-up jumper or being able to kind of do a ball fake or a swing or even put the ball on the floor, there's a lot of talent there. And, you know, he told me that he was kind of tired of being anonymous to some degree in New Orleans. He said no one ever gets up to play New Orleans. He said we would lose, and it's like, oh, they were supposed to lose. That's New Orleans. He told me, I want to play these 35 games on national TV, I want to feel the pressure of it's got to be on me or my name's going to be in the tabloids the next day.
It's coming because it's never LeBron's fault. That's just what it is. To be the other guy on LeBron's team, ask Kyrie, ask Kevin Love, ask David Blatt, ask you, on and on, ask Spo, it's not going to be LeBron's fault if things go bad. Now, he may roll his eyes on the court, and his shoulders may sag, and he may put his palms up to the sky and you know, wonder what's happening when people make mistakes and make a big, you know, make what are intentionally noticeable gestures. There may even be a tweet again. Who knows? A fit-out tweet or if whatever the tweet was. But it's not going to be LeBron's fault if things don't go well in L.A.
You're right. I think there was a stage of his career where he got so much criticism. You know,
right. Post winning the title. Year one in Miami and the aftermath. It was all. But what it took for that to happen was, I mean, he had a meltdown in the finals against Dallas. There's no way to mince words about it. He had a meltdown. He's admitted he had a meltdown. He was not himself. He did not play well enough. Period. It was the one. It was, you could argue, the only playoff series of his career where he just frankly did not show up, and other people would use the Boston one that was his last series in Cleveland go round number one when there are all sorts of rumors about a shoulder injury and some other stuff, but the Dallas criticism was deserved. So let me tell you who I think was the star of your story, not in terms of star being like he's the hero of the story or anything, but the guy that I found most interesting in the story, part of the story to me was Rich Paul, because Rich Paul has made a decision. He's talking for himself now. He's not going to be according to sources. He's not going to be according to a source familiar with LeBron's thinking. He is going to be quoted, and he's going to tell you his story, and he's going to tell you his perspective, and he's going to go on the record, Rich Paul said, which is unusual for an agent, and boy, oh boy, does he say some interesting things in this story. Let's talk about some of those interesting things, because I want to get your perspective on them. Number one, Anthony wanted to go to the Lakers or the Knicks. Those were the teams. And so when Anthony Davis got traded on June 6th, the Knicks kind of just faded out of the discussion. Like, I don't even recall reading or hearing about or hearing from sources about this was the Knicks' final offer or this is what was being considered. Like, I they just seem to kind of fade out of the discussion. And then you have his agent X months later saying to you on the record, there were two teams, the Lakers and the Knicks, and that's it. So let's go back in time. What did you learn about, like, was the Knicks actually a thing? Like, how real was it, or was it not real by the end?
Well, so the question, I think, is could it still be real, or could it have still been real? So even if he had the priority of wanting Lakers over the Knicks, he was going to be a free agent in 2020, right? And so had the Knicks had the summer they had hoped for, had the Knicks gotten the number one pick and gotten Zion and gotten one of the big free agents and then had a year to matriculate, and meanwhile maybe he went to the Lakers and the Lakers, it had a similar year to the last 6 years, right? Where it just continued to not be able to get out from under this rain cloud. Would he have potentially done a year rental with LA, then gone to the Knicks? That's the big question I wonder about.
Well, I just don't think a year like that is possible if LeBron and Anthony Davis are on the same team. I guess it's possible. LeBron gets hurt again. It's more serious. We've already seen that shaky teams constructed around Anthony Davis. By the way, we've seen shaky teams constructed around almost every top player in the NBA not do very well. It's not unique to Anthony Davis that the Pelicans did not do very well, even when you have a great year, if the team around him was not good. I just don't, you know, the Knicks just sort of, once they didn't win the lottery, they just sort of faded into oblivion, or oblivion, as Mike Tyson would say. I just thought it was interesting that Rich would bring that up again. It seems like he really had an interest in going there.
Yeah, certainly. And that wasn't even like me leading him into that. Rich made that declaration as fact. And, you know, it makes you realize that, man, this was a make or break summer for the Knicks, and it really didn't go their way.
It also makes you think about the Porzingis trade, because, look, it's water under the bridge, and it's still sort of TBD. How is he going to play? What are those Dallas picks? The Knicks now own two Dallas picks, including an unprotected 2023 pick. What are those going to be? The Knicks didn't even have one full max slot before that trade, and they opened up that and a second one. Now, obviously, they didn't get the guys that they wanted. I don't care what they say about Media Day, about how they had a great summer and they got the guys they wanted. This is the same team that sent out an apology press release on July 1st to their fans. So take that for what it's worth. But had they kept Porzingis, I think their biggest obstacle to an Anthony Davis trade was A, not winning the lottery, which was I believe a 14% chance or a 16% chance. I can't remember what it was. It was not something that you should ever bank on.
I think it was 14, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But it's that I don't know how they could have been confident without a lot of other things going right in the same summer that he was ever going to stay there. Now, maybe it's that they thought if we trade for him, we get Durant, or if we trade for him, then it helps us in free agency. But it does make you think, what if Porzingis had been there? You could look to Anthony Davis and say, well, we already have a star here, and you could have still traded all the young guys you have now, other than Dennis Smith Jr., who was acquired in that trade. And obviously you don't have the Dallas picks to trade in this scenario, but you have all your own picks. You have RJ Barrett, or the number three pick. Like, they could have made essentially an equivalent offer to what they theoretically could have made in the real universe that we live in. And I just wonder if Porzingis' presence would have made a difference. Now, Knicks would tell you Porzingis was too far gone. We had to trade him. I mean, this has all been out there. People have written this already. He didn't want to be here. We were worried he was going to take his qualifying offer, yada, yada, yada. We only want guys who want to be here. So it was an interesting counterfactual to me.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing, Rich, I didn't really lead the horse to water on this one. He just kind of said it when he was speaking to me about the amazing player that he thinks Anthony Davis is, and he's rattling off what he does well. He's 6'11", he can shoot the three, he can block shots, and he's an excellent playmaker. And then the reigning MVP comes up, and he said that's the difference in Rich Paul's opinion. And he's clear to say that he's speaking for Rich Paul and not for any person that he represents. But he said that's the difference in Rich Paul's opinion, that Anthony Davis is a better player than Giannis Antetokounmpo. And not only is a better player than Giannis, in Rich's opinion, but he goes as far to say if AD was on the Bucks last year, they would have made the finals.
Can I read the quote?
Yes, please.
I think he's one of the better passing big men in our game. In my opinion, this is what makes him different from Giannis. Like, if you put Anthony Davis on that Bucks team last year, they'd be playing in the finals. He knows how to make guys better. That's not a knock to Giannis, but that's just what I think. Well, it is a knock on Giannis. But so I read that, And I thought, well, I don't even have to look up the assist numbers. Giannis averages is way more assists. He's a much better passer than Anthony Davis. This is a ridiculous story. This is a ridiculous quote on its face. Giannis had a better season than Anthony Davis last year. And then you start to think about it. I still don't agree with him. I still don't agree with Rich. I think Rich is exaggerating. Not that he's exaggerating about how good Anthony Davis is. I think the quote's a little much, but then you start to think, like, teams can't just leave Anthony Davis standing wide open at the top of the arc, inviting him to shoot threes. So that's like somewhat interesting. I think I think defensively, I thought Giannis had a better season defensively last year, but you can just say they're roughly equivalent. But even so, I disagree with him in the sense that I don't think Anthony Davis's off the dribble and passing game has evolved to the point where you can say he's definitively superior at making guys better than Giannis, and that if you put him on that Bucks team, they're in the finals because he's better than Giannis. Now, they may make the finals last year because they almost made the finals as it is. So it's not that's sort of not proof of his argument to me, but once I started to think about it more, it did not seem as off base of a statement as I had read it initially. And you're saying he just said this. He just came out.
He just said it. Like, I wasn't like, how do you compare Anthony Davis to the other young bright stars in today's game? This was just like locked and loaded. And it's one of those ones where you're having the conversation and you're trying not to have your eyes, you know, pop out of your head because you know that it's something that will get play. And if you get a quote that gets play, your story will get play and, you know, your work is worth it.
Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. My wife and I were just in Europe, and I said the most underrated thing that you can do is look up, and there's all sorts of cool stuff up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimps are cool, has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. The other Rich Paul quote that I thought was very interesting and one that leads to a very interesting discussion is, I'll just read it. He's talking about Danny Ainge and how they essentially poisoned the water with the Celtics. The last thing you want to do is put a GM in a situation where he trades away an asset and then the guy walks out the door. Like, you can't do business that way. So that's not a hard conversation to have. And then he says he doesn't think that it stopped Danny Ainge from, like, making offers and stuff. But that's very interesting to me because I do think he's right in this sense. In all of the pearl clutching about player empowerment this summer, and there are legitimate reasons to be a little bit anxious about what happened this summer, but I think they're less to do with the act of players taking control of their careers than they are to do with where those players are going. Like, they're all going to the coasts. I think that's something that the NBA has to reckon with a little bit. But a point that is overlooked in the pearl clutching is all of these teams are better off. The Pelicans are better off because Anthony Davis went to them and said, I am not re-signing, trade me. The Thunder are better off because Paul George went to them and said, look, I don't want to just play out my contract here. I want to leave. Get something for me. And boy, did they get a lot for him. It's sort of an unavoidable hard truth because it's unpleasant. It cuts the team building process short. We don't know how good the Thunder would have been this year. They could have been really good. Who knows? I'm sure that they would like to have had another 50-win season in Oklahoma City. We don't know how good New Orleans would have been this year. Maybe the summer would have broken totally different from them and you know, with Anthony Davis and Zion even. We don't know. We don't know what that, like, it cuts the team building process short. And all these small markets, they don't want to be stuck in an endless cycle where you draft a great player, you get 6 or 7 years, then you have to rebuild again, do that again, rebuild again. Like, it has to go perfect or you're just in this constant, like, well, at least we have draft picks. But what Rich and other agents will say this too, it's just undeniably right. These teams are better off for the knowledge that these players don't want to be there and the assets that they get in return. Or in his example, the Celtics are better off having not traded for Anthony Davis than they would be having traded Jason Tatum and the Memphis pick that they own and whatever else, gotten Anthony Davis, and 6 months later, he's gone. Like, it's just, it's true. It's a hard truth, and it's hard to reckon with, and it raises uncomfortable questions about the timeline you have to build a team and how that timeline is different if you're in a small market versus a big market. But it's just true. The agents are right.
The irony of it, though, is it made me think of LeBron's last season in Cleveland and kind of a storyline that year was, will the Cavs trade away the Brooklyn pick to try to get an asset to make that team better in the moment without knowing what LeBron's going to do in the summer of 2018? And ultimately, I think you would say that, you know, who knows what type of player Colin Sexton ultimately will end up being, but they probably made the right decision not to trade that pick that season. And it was, so it's the opposite, like, whereas if they're not getting the information, they got to make their call for themselves.
And they definitely had opportunities to trade that pick for a real player. Like, they had deals that I'm very confident were on the table for that pick. And I don't, again, you're right. I don't know what you're supposed to do. But I thought it was interesting how blunt Rich was. And again, I give him credit. He's not hiding behind anonymity. He's not trying to sugarcoat the way he did business here. He's saying Anthony didn't want to go to Boston. We used every avenue we had at our disposal to make it very clear that he did not want to go to Boston and he was not going to re-sign there. In his view, the Celtics are better off for him having made it that clear. Now, the Celtics would disagree with some of that assessment for how it went down. But it's certainly an interesting point, and I do think in all of the harumphing about player empowerment from some old school people, I think that point has been missed. What else? What have we not gotten to? You have a whole John Wick aside in the story. Somehow we haven't talked about John Wick. I'm reading this story, and I'm like, how is the first 200 words about John Wick? Please explain.
So Anthony Davis, we got to know him a little bit more in this story. And so he plays video games, Madden. He goes to movies. That's his stress relief. He watched so many movies, actually, that he told me LeBron kind of gets on him a little bit, has already gotten on him for, like, you got to do more film study. You got to watch more basketball. But he's a movie guy. So he went to a movie theater.
LeBron is filming Space Jam this summer. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
This is early June before the trade. Late May, early June before the trade. I'm not sure the exact date. And he just wants to get off his phone. He likes to go to the movies, you know, because it's a dark theater. You're not on your phone. You're not on social media. You're not, you know, being recognized as Anthony Davis. You're just a dude watching a movie. And he went to see John Wick 3. Parabellum, I believe. I haven't seen any in the series. It's my understanding you have, Zach.
Well, we were all in Los Angeles recently for a bunch of things, and I had dinner with a non-NBA friend. I call them human friends, like non-NBA humans. Like people are surprised that I have the human friends. One of my best friends now has moved to Los Angeles, so I had to see his house. We had dinner. We had so much Indian food, it was disgusting. Just the sheer amount of it. Indian food is my favorite food in the world, to be clear. And he was telling me that on a recent flight, he was like, I want to turn my brain off. I picked John Wick 2. And I said, I've heard a lot of good things about these John Wick films. Are they films or movies? I don't know, but I've heard a lot of good things about this John Wick. And I said, did you have to watch the first one? Like, am I going to miss, are there critical nuances from the plot that I'm going to miss if I just dive right into John Wick 2? Because John Wick 1 is not available on Delta. It's a real John Wick dilemma. And he said, I think you're going to be all right. So I watched John Wick 2. I'm now familiar with the John Wick films. And let me tell you, the only thing that happens in those movies is that John Wick kills people. The whole movie is, there's no break. There's no, like, John Wick goes on a date with a love interest. He just kills people the entire movie. So that's it. And I spoiled it
so
for
that,
you.
I mean, that's very much an escape from reality, right? So he's at the movie, and it's one of these fancy theaters where you can order food right to your seat. And, you know, they time it out, you know, probably right before the climax. They come and give you your bill, and you pay the credit card. You put the credit card back in his wallet, put the wallet back in his bag, left the theater having a peaceful night, escaping from the trade speculation. Gets up the next morning, gets in his car, goes to the gas station, goes to fill up, and realizes he doesn't have his wallet. So he must have left it at the theater, he thinks. So he goes to the theater, he checks for it, doesn't show up. All right, pretty sure I left it there, but whatever. So calls the next day, doesn't show up. Calls the next day, doesn't show up. Goes back to the theater, and I don't know, I wish I asked him this question. I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he has, like, stacks of money at his house, because that's what NBA players do when they lose their wallet. Like, they still got, like, hundos out the wazoo. But I don't know what he's doing to pay for things over
this
time period.
Hundos.
Yeah, I don't know. Trying to give some spice to it. I wanted to drop a word that you would never hear otherwise on your podcast. Like, you often say burbling, which the only time I ever hear it is from you on the podcast, and I've grown to strangely love it. Like, burbling should be a drinking game for you, yeah, for listeners of your podcast. But so he goes back to theater. He sees another movie this time, Seth Rogen, Long Shot. Still, asks the manager, no wallet shows up. Goes back to Chicago, where he's from, plans to visit family and friends, but ends up spending the weekend, or I'm not sure if it was the weekend, his days, his time there, taking care of replacing this wallet. So he said he had a driver's license, plus a state ID, plus credit cards, plus an insurance card, plus replacing the actual wallet. Now, the wallet he lost was, I became aware of this brand, Goyard. It's a French brand. Their website doesn't actually have the prices of their products on it. So it's got to be insane.
Shockingly, I'm not aware of the brand.
Yeah. I saw some like secondary market Goyard wallets that you could purchase on like StockX for like, which is like a sneaker and I guess hype beast type of site, for like $1,000 for a wallet. So anyway, that's a quick aside, but, he replaces it all. And he comes back to LA where he has an off-season home. And this is after the trade. And now he's a Laker and not a Pelican. And he goes back to the theater, this time to see Good Boys. And he's sitting in his seat and an attendant comes up and they say, Mr. Davis, our manager wants to see you. We have your wallet. And he couldn't believe it. And he told me that it had to be, now that I'm a Laker, that, you know, this is the type of perks you get in LA when you're a Laker versus being an opposing player.
Dear, let me just be clear. You or him or both of you are accusing the movie theater of holding Anthony Davis's wallet hostage until he and all the other characters in the story forced Anthony Davis's way to the Lakers.
Okay. Surmising, yes. I'm just passing on the story.
I just enjoyed that when a celebrity loses their wallet, it's just as inconvenient for them as it is for a regular person. Like, Anthony Davis has to get on the phone and call the credit card companies, and Anthony Davis has to like go to the DMV and get a new driver, whatever you have to do to get a new driver. Like, there's not a secret, you know, backdoor way around this for a super, super famous person. That was refreshing to me.
Yeah, he was fired up about it, though. He was telling me, like, I had to change my Apple wallet, the credit card in there, all my apps. I had to notify my financial advisor, And it was like, yeah, I mean, I've never actually lost my wallet, but I once thought I lost my wallet in college, where the girl I was dating, I'd left it at her, like, house, and I went home, and I was like, I knew that feeling. That's a pit in your stomach where you're like, oh my gosh, like, not only that, you know, what people could be doing with your credit cards or the cash that's in there, but like to the process of replacing it all. Like, that's a major inconvenience.
Oh, it's not. Now all the apps that you had, just like all my stupid apps I have to go in there that are linked to my credit card. I have my New York Ferry app, my, you know, every app I have is paid for with that same credit card. It's a huge pain. All right, look, we're gonna have plenty of time to talk about the Lakers this season. Go read Dave's story. It's on Anthony. There's lots we didn't get into. There's lots of particulars about the trade we didn't get into. There's lots of little offshoots we didn't get into. It's just a really delightful sort of collection of fun stories about Anthony Davis, who is one of the more fascinating characters of the season. So, Dave, great work. Thank you for hopping on, and we look forward to your coverage of this crazy team all season, my friend.
Appreciate it, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.